logical ethics, unknown misery.
Yo, businessman, you a genius.
Loud,
one,
mathematic, production by Soul for Hire. Tragic days.
I don't wanna die by the hands of my brother like Cain. In the eyes of my mother, seen her drowning with pain. It's the cries of my people disregarded in vain. Single mothers left to struggle, no one guarded the brain. Welfare, healthcare, whoever started the game. From cradle to the grave, they wanna treat us like slaves. Don't need a quarter, need a change, they can't amount to bills. To put the borders on my land, we got some mouths to fill. Without a chance, choking with bail, they choke with ropes. Turn the hope into dope, cause they hope will be choked. But I'm defiant, stand firm with my lines. Burn the Bible on the collar. Colonize upon the tyrant. Remain a rebel to the devil's systematic ways. Remain strong for the cause through these tragic days.
The banging guns won't stop gun violence. Changing mindsets will.
Now let's go. Mixed it.
Like I'm trapped in a whirlwind. Wrote tons of rhymes for songs you never heard spin. A burden I'm born to bear. In my own version, if you listen, you hear. Hunger and the passion, my emotion prepare. Together with the ganja sparked up in the flare. Yeah, my stomach touching my ribs. My food fed to my kids. But I gotta hold on, cause it's feeling like a long bed. The young black and gifted, I'm born to rise. White collar stepping and industrialized. We must realize, civilized a barbarian is dwelling inside. It was a state of emergency.
It gets deep at the altar. I'm tired of my people walking like sheep for the slaughter. To my brothers blasting guns with your African tongue. Still we dance to the rhythm of the African drum. Yo, this land was built on bloodshed, enough dead. So what's next? I'm sick of these histories missing me. Enough said. Genocidal wars on the black and the poor. Families torn, got me knocking on heaven's door. But all I hear is whispers followed by a slither. Souls quiver in the winter, will the father deliver? Blood in my eyes, lost the love of my life. And there is nothing I can do but bring my life to a new. A phoenix spawned from these ashes while you're lost in the traffic. The cost could be tragic, have you barked in a casket. It's one thing we know how to survive. Change with the times, I'm taking back what was rightfully mine.
You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the basement of Carruthers Hall, Queen's University Campus, Kingston, Ontario, Turtle Island. You're listening to The Massive. It's 7 p.m., February 7th, and I'm here, DJ Fraz, with two new DJs to The Massive who are very excited to be in studio here, and they're going to introduce themselves now.
My name is DJ M, and I'm doing The Massive today.
Hey, my name is DJ Rogue. Nice to see you. Nice to meet you.
Yay, new DJs. So
I can't
exciting.
See you. So that was not a really good comment.
Okay, so I think we're going to get started with some community announcements.
That sounds good.
really good. So upcoming events happening for Black History Month at Queen's University for the month of February is QCRED, Queen's Coalition Against Ethnic and Racial Discrimination, is bringing to you an exclusive Each One Teach One. The topic for discussion will be internalized racism. This is happening on February 10th, Thursday, 6 p.m. The QCRED office, JDUC, room 343. The discussion is going to be about various ways people of color and Indigenous people internalize the oppression. This is a special Black History Month event, so please come out. There's going to be dinner as well.
Hey, it's DJ Rogue. And another QCred event that we have going on is Stolen from Africville by Stolen from Africa, which is a collective from Toronto, featuring local ethics. Yeah. We're going to be screening our film, documentary, Stolen from Africville, which is a short film, followed by Remember Africville. Following the screening will be a question and answer discussion, so people can just deconstruct what they saw and just have a good time doing that. Both films are about the tragic history of the Black community of Africville in Nova Scotia and the relocation into the inner city of Halifax. The residents of Africville were relocated in 1969. In 2004, the United Nations conducted an assessment of the tragic injustice and recommended reparations for the Africville community. To this day, former Africville residents continue to return to the site of the community annually to remember what was lost. So come out and join us. Okay, so if that sounds good to you, which I hope it does, come out to the John Arm Room on the first floor of the JDEC at 7 o'clock on February 16th. Good times.
Also happening right now and during this show is CFRC's sixth annual funding drive. So the goal is to raise $25,000 over a series of 10 days. We're encouraging all of our listeners tonight to please call in and donate at any point during tonight's show.
Yeah.
Yeah, call in. We need the money.
Yeah, and if you ever want to hear us again, donate. We're just going to disappear silently into the night. And then you're going to wonder. You're going to turn on the dial. I'm like, geez, time for CRC. And oh no, they don't exist anymore. And now you're like, oh, maybe I could have done something. Well, you can.
You can call in and donate now.
Don't ask for me, though, because don't, like... Don't say that mean girl, that mean person, threatened me, because I didn't.
Yeah, and if you do call in during today's show, we'll give you a shout-out at the end, some love.
Yay!
Please call in. The number to dial is 613-533-2372, daily between 8 a.m. and midnight. Through to February 14th, so you can just dial this number to make a pledge over the phone, or you can check out cfrc.ca to donate online also. First, we want to talk about what's happening on today's show, and for the next 3 weeks on The Massive, we're going to be featuring a special radio documentary.
By Queens alumni. Anna Thomas, about experiences of racialized community members, about the experiences living in Kingston as people of color.
Yeah, so this is a series of radio documentaries that were produced over the summer through a work study with OPERG, the Ontario Public Interest Research Group, and Anna was hired, who's also a former Massive DJ, who we want to send a lot of love to also, former board member of QCred, was hired during the summer to sort of do research on local Kingston Black history, and the result of this research has been the production of three different radio documentaries that are all sort of like interviews, as DJ M said, about experiences of Blackness in Kingston. So yeah, we're very excited to have these airing on The Massive. So tonight's is part one of this documentary series.
Please stay tuned.
Stay tuned and make sure to call in and donate to CFRC and check out the full funding drive schedule online, because there are multiple events that you can also come to support if you can't call in tonight and donate.
Yeah, give us money.
Yay,
and... Yeah, we also want to hear from you or something.
Yes, we do. I'm not being sarcastic. To Anna Thomas.
Thank you, Anna. Shout out to my mother.
Yay. J-Rogue's mom. Who is hopefully listening to this show. All right, stay tuned. We're going to get to Anna's documentary in just a couple seconds.
Black in Kingston, right? This is the focus, being black in Kingston. How do I feel about being black in Kingston? At times, being black in Kingston, at times I feel lost, but I've gotten used so much to my lostness that it looks normal or feels normal.
So when people ask me where are you from, I tell them I'm from Africa. If you are interested to ask where in Africa, I will tell. But if you're not interested, that's it. Mm-hmm. Now people don't even know, you know. The people don't even know where they are right now. They don't. They know that they're in Kingston or they know that they're in Africa, you know. So ignorant.
Some of the smartest dummies can't read the language of Egyptian mummies on a flag or a moon. And can't find food for the starving tummies. Pay no mind to the youth.
Over the months of July and August 2010, I interviewed black residents about their experiences living in Kingston. This radio documentary is a collection of parts of those interviews. This project grew out of research I was doing through Oprah Kingston on the black history of the Kingston area. Sitting in archives, libraries, and chatting with people whose memories are far more detailed than poor records inspired me to record the story that I was hearing. This is a contemporary history. A reminder that though black people have lived in this area since the first settlers arrived, we continue to be a strong presence in Kingston. My wonderful assistant Rosa and I met with people in offices, libraries, coffee shops, workplaces. I interviewed friends and people I'd never met. I'd like to thank each and every one of the participants. Your stories are stories of courage, survival, optimism. They are also often stories of isolation, dislocation, and fears about the future. Each interview lasted between 20 and 40 minutes, and each I found incredibly moving. Thank you for sharing your lives and laughter with me. My name is Anna Thomas, and I moved to Kingston 4 years ago to begin my degree at Queen's. As a mixed-race woman who grew up in rural Ontario communities, the question of a racialized community has always been something that enticed and confused me, scared me even a bit. Unlike many people I interview, moving to Kingston was a culture shock of diversity for me. Here were people who also didn't look like the people I'd always known I didn't look like. By the time I was in second year, my curiosity about what being a woman of color means in community overrode my fears about facing my racial identity. I began attending meetings and discussion groups, reading, writing papers, and talking about race. I had the immense privilege to coordinate Black History Month in February of 2010, an experience enriched by the people I met who have been continuing a sense of community in this city. But also saddened that there wasn't more of a link between residents and students outside of the month of February. This project is a way of beginning to talk about blackness in Kingston. It is therefore, and of course, partial, limited by the numbers of people I interviewed, limited by the questions I asked, and limited by time. But I hope I find these part narratives and fragmented glimpses as wonderful and interesting as I have.
Can you make peace? Can you fight war? My name is Christina Kutama. I moved to Kingston in 2007. It feels like forever, but yeah, I just moved to Kingston in 2007. When I moved with my family, which comprises of myself, my husband, and my three daughters. One of my daughters was about a month old when we moved to Kingston, and we were originally moving from, long story short, from Montreal since 2001, moved to Cornwall, which is a very small town, in 2005, and eventually to Kingston 2007.
My name is Ebony Rose. I attend Queen's University. I'm going into my third year as a political studies major and English minor.
My name is Joseph, last name Munyambane. And I was born and raised in South Africa. And I came in this country in 1989. And that was a big change for me to come in this country.
Do you feel a sense of a black community in Kingston?
I guess with this sigh and hesitation of answering, not as much as I would want. There's a division that I cannot specifically point out to, but do I have friends who are from the Black community? Yes, I do. Do I have a sense of community in the sense of when I have problems, I know where to run to and who will support me and be there for me and give me practical assistance? I don't know. Mm-hmm. But definitely I can say I have good friends in Kingston who are Black.
You know, what would a system where you could run to that kind of practical help look like for you? How do you think that could work in Kingston?
So just in May, this year has had so many things that happened to my family and I. So for instance, in May, my mom got sick. And my mom is a senior, an immigrant who's never worked in Canada, still is in the cultural shock mode of understanding how the system works. My mother fell ill and was in hospital. Unfortunately, she was in the ICU, and there was a chance of her recovering and a chance of her passing away. Mm-hmm. And I've heard in other communities outside Kingston where there are associations, and in Kingston we do have associations of other ethnocultural groups, whereby there's financial assistance. That's mm-hmm. the practical assistance that I'm talking about. I was thinking at that time, if my mom was to pass on, who was I going to run to and get assistance?
Do you have a sense of a Black community in Kingston?
Very little. Really? Very handful, yeah. Even if they're there, but they're not together. We're not together. Mm-hmm. There's no community spirit or get together. Too few Black people. Not too many. I like in Toronto, Ottawa, so there are mm-hmm. quite a number.
Do you have a sense of a Black community in Kingston?
No.
I mean, I know a few Black people, or people that I identify as Black. I don't know how they identify. I have a few Black friends, but I wouldn't call it a community because I wouldn't say that, like, I wouldn't say we all know each other. Like, the people that I know, we don't all know each other. So, and to me, that's sort of a, not a, like, necessity of community, but it's sort of important to me.
When do you decide to come to Kingston?
Oh, it's a long question. It's the last one. Well, when I was in South Africa, due to political situation, mm-hmm. I went to Botswana, which is a neighboring country, and I stayed there for 2 years. After that, I went to Kenya to study there. Then I was in Kenya 3 years. I was a political refugee by then. And then after finishing my studies in Kenya, I went to back to Botswana, which was my country of political asylum. And looking back at the situation in South Africa, the atmosphere was too bad for, particularly for Black people. So I decided to move on and decided to apply for landed status in Canada. So then I applied for landed status, and then I was accepted. And then not knowing anybody in Canada, and then I was posted to Kingston. I didn't know anyone in Kingston, so they picked a seat and said, go to Kingston.
I'm Rosie Karras. I am a first-year arts and science student. I've lived in Kingston for about 15 years, 15, 16. So having grown up in the place, I'd say I'm fairly comfortable with Kingston. It's my home. I love it.
I think another theme that's come up in a lot is the amount of, I mean, one person used the word survival, talking about living in Kingston and finding community and working and
having a home and all those things has been very, very difficult, and experiences of discrimination in that way. Is this something that you can speak to, that you've either experienced or witnessed?
Well, definitely surviving is a crucial aspect of being who you become as an immigrant, and especially as a black person. Discrimination, I'll jump straight to discrimination. With my family, with myself, as a settlement worker, I'll put in my work, I'm a settlement worker, I tend to have an open mind about all issues that pertain to racism and discrimination, and always want to give people the benefit of the doubt. And in my work, I've also been very fortunate to get training in cross-cultural communication and seeing what's underneath the iceberg with people's intentions, and always want to give the benefit of the doubt in order to remain sane, I should say. And so, not that I don't get discriminated against, but I just try to push it off, mm-hmm. which I don't think is a good idea. But I try to do that so that I remain positive in my day-to-day work, because the type of work that I'm involved in is working with immigrants, as well as working with women who are facing abuse or in abusive relationships. So all that takes a lot of self-care and just having positive mindset and trying to be as open-minded and being as active, an active witness to discrimination or racism. If I see it, I call upon it. If I don't, I don't call upon it. But I'm trying by all means to always call upon it.
My name is Jerome James. I am doing my master's at Queen's University. I just finished 1 year of that. And
so, do you feel in Kingston like a sense of black community? And if so, how would you describe it?
No, I don't think. See, it's tough because I never sought out one, so I'm sure there probably is with the handful of people that are here, but I never sought it out.
So you've been here for 15 years. What kind of changes in Kingston have you seen in terms of diversity?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of diversity in Kingston. When I just came here, Kingston was not diverse at all. It wasn't. But now when I look around, I can see people of different colors mm-hmm. moving around. But there are a lot of problems here, a lot of attitudes when I look around. It's still mm-hmm. there. And particularly when you go around, talk to people, you see a lot of attitudes.
Yeah. Can you give an example of that?
It comes in many cases, you know, when it comes to jobs, when mm-hmm. it comes to talking to people. You know, people tend to ask you, where are you from? You know, just when they see you, where are you from? You know, not even knowing who you are. The first thing they see you, they look at your color skin, where are you from? So that really bothers me sometimes. I don't feel comfortable with it. And another thing when it comes to employment, it's a really hard city to get employment in.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, there's no industry. The only job you can get here is minimum wage.
Yeah.
And it's 10 times harder for someone of color to get a job. It's not easy.
Mm-hmm. So, do you have a sense of a black community in Kingston?
No. That's a really quick one to answer. Kingston's a white town. Kingston's a white place.
Do you think that being in Kingston and being in such a visible minority, of a visible minority,
How has that impacted the way you think of yourself in terms of race?
I think it's sort of strengthened like my identity as a Black woman, because I, like I said, in high school, I should have identified that way all of my life. I have, but it hasn't, it's just sort of been like, oh yeah, I'm a Black woman, no big deal. Because it never really was a big deal, because I have so many friends that are the same, and like even friends that aren't, because we're all used to the diversity, it kind of just didn't really, I never really felt bad about it. But like coming here, I had to like recheck myself and like remember who I am and why I'm here, and like to remain like at the core, like of course people change as they grow, but like to remain at the core of me like the same person. And so like being here, because I'm so marked, has made me like 100% accept and embrace like my race, and it has made me able to talk about it and to like bring it up and to like challenge people, because when people are like dancing around the subject, I'm like, do you mean because I'm Black? Just say that. Is that what you're asking? Is that what you're trying to, like, it's not a problem. And I think that in itself makes people uncomfortable. And I don't have any problem making people uncomfortable, because I think to learn, you have to be uncomfortable. You have to feel, and because when you are uncomfortable, you realize, like, why do I feel uncomfortable? And you sort of like dig through that. And so, yeah, it's made me like a lot more like rooted in that part of myself. And I have no problems like talking about it now, whereas before I might not even have thought to talk about it. So
talking about my immediate family, definitely I feel discriminated, especially with my daughters. I have three daughters, the oldest 13, who faces numerous barriers at school, being called names, being made fun of, and when she comes home and cries on my shoulder telling me about all the experiences that she has at school because of being Black, that saddens me a lot. And I've been very active in the schools, in the sense that I have called the schools, the school in particular, and asked the teachers or the headmistress what they're doing, what they've done to the children, what are they planning to do as PD for the teachers. Maybe the teachers too are ignorant of where what culture and multiculturalism is, even though it's part of the curriculum. So it's been tough with my family, and my husband, it's even worse, in the sense that he's had interviews and he tells me he feels he's done excellently in the interview, but because he's a Black man, he feels there's that lack of trust that he'll excel in the work or work as hard. Maybe he's just being given the stereotype that he's just another Black man who will be lazy, miss work, and will end up in prison. So, as I mentioned, that has since changed. He's working in Kingston, but in the past, it's been very difficult. And I feel in the future, too, being in a small town like Kingston, it'll continue to be difficult. But I feel as if we have our own allies in the community and we continue to support each other as a family, those things can be not necessarily ignored, but can be made to not affect the future in the sense of day-to-day living.
Does Kingston feel like home?
No, it does feel a little bit. Yeah, I mean it's a good place to live and maybe raise children. But when it comes to employment, this employment, yeah, mm-hmm. It's bad. Well, if you have a job, you know, it's a good place.
And so when you think of home, you think of here?
Kingston?
Kingston.
No, when I think of home, I think of home, back home. Well, my heritage is still the same. I still embrace it. I still love my culture. I still love other cultures. Like now, have a family. I'm married, so we're two cultures, Chilean and South African. So we combine them. So those are our two cultures, two heritage. So this is good about it now. It's even the flags here, yeah, South Africa and Chile. So we embrace all cultures, both cultures. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For black people, I grew up being the only black one in, you know, a class of 28 or a class of 27, however large the classes were. It's always been that way. I wasn't, and it's not odd for me, to be honest, because I've gotten so used to it that that I'm referred to by my family as a white person. Because, like, with the joking and all that stuff, because I just haven't been around, you know, stereotypical black people my life. And whenever I go to Toronto, whenever I go to Ottawa, never been to Montreal, but big cities like that, it's kind of a shock. It's kind of a culture shock for me a little bit, because you're surrounded by people that are just, that look the way you do, and you're not used to it, you know. And and just being so used to Kingston, it's very hard to leave Kingston and be around different colors, different religions, different languages, and it's nice. Like, I appreciate it, but it's different. Like, it's definitely a feeling of like, ooh, do I even belong in here, or should I go back to Kingston? Is that where I belong?
Do you like Kingston?
Kingston's fine. See, I have no problem. Like, people are gonna be who they're gonna be. I remember saying this to someone else, and they're like, "Why are you disappointed in your choice? Would you have gone somewhere else than Queens and being kids?" I'm like, "No, I'm telling you how it is. It doesn't mean I'm gonna shy away from it or say because of this, I feel at a loss or." It's not gonna stop me from doing what I want to do. And I think it's hard for some people because that's my defense mechanism, I guess. Mm-hmm. And some people act differently in the face of these things.
Having a 13-year-old daughter, I know when I was growing up, I had a lot of issues about, you know, am I pretty enough? Why doesn't he like me? Why does he like her? Having the textured hair, having, you know, the darker skin, being the dark one in a class of 30, in a class of 28, however many. How is it when she comes home, and I'm gonna assume, correct me if I'm wrong, that she has those experiences too.
Mm-hmm.
How is it as a mother, you know, approaching that?
It's very, very difficult, and it's something that I feel so uncomfortable talking about with my daughter because my emotions are involved, right? Mm-hmm. And when she comes home telling me we were at break time, this is an example that just happened before schools were closed. She comes home and she tells me they were in the playground and a white boy says, oh, I have a jock. Do you know what God did when he was creating men? And everybody was like, what did he do? And he says, he met a white person, and then afterwards he said, oops, I burnt it. So I didn't get it at first. So I'm like to my daughter, what do you mean? And she says, well, he meant that black people, we were burnt. That's why we are black and we have a horrible color. So other kids who were there laughed and went on. And thank goodness she had two friends who were there.
You think your like racial identity affects your life in Kingston, like specifically, like walking down the street, whatever, your day-to-day existence?
Well, I was never so aware of it until coming here, because in Toronto, there's a lot more diversity, and I had a lot more black friends. And I also have like friends from all across the board, but coming here, because there are so few of us, I was suddenly like painfully aware of the fact that my skin was so different. And I would be like, I'd be like an English 110, and I'd look around and be the only black person, and it would freak me out, because I'd be like, this is insane. And like, for the first month and a half, I really wanted to leave, and that was a big part of it. Like, also, like, with being away from my mom and all that other stuff, but, like, that was a big part of just wanting to go, because I was just, I felt so different. I think it makes you, it's hard, because, like, I feel like sometimes you have a couple of choices. Like, either you sort of, I don't want to use the word assimilate, because I don't really like that word, but you sort of, at least for myself, I felt like sometimes I'd have to lose certain characteristics or certain parts of me that identified me as Black. Even like to the way I spoke would be different, and I didn't notice it until I like took a step back and listened. Or like other sort of things, and either you like do that or you maintain those things and be very like upfront about it. So it's always awkward. To this day, if I bring it up, it's always weird. And if someone else says something, it's always like everyone stops and looks at me and waits to see how I react before they can react.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's different. I noticed it. Definitely noticed it.
Would you say that you've experienced racism in Kingston?
You know what? Actually, I don't know. I don't think I've ever looked for it. And I know, like, you know, sometimes it's so obvious. And that's what I've looked for. I've never experienced any obvious racism. But now growing up and having a 2-year-old little brother who is dark-skinned, like, my complexion, I'm seeing it. I'm seeing it a little bit more than I'd like to. And it's very unfortunate because maybe I ignored it. Maybe I was just really ignorant and thinking that, you know, racism's done. At least it doesn't exist in Canada. And if it does, it's not against white people. I mean, Black people. You know, that's gone, right? And I think I was really ignorant and naive to in believing that. But now, throughout this month, I guess that I've learned working on this project that, you know, these events still happen. And these events are very prominent. And it's not necessarily obvious anymore. It's not about being lynched or being called, you know, the N-word in public or you know, that happens too, right? But now it's more subtle. Now it's, an example, one of the people we interviewed was, you know, going to a checkout line, having the person before you get a hello, get a nice send-off, whatever, and you approaching that same cashier, being a different color, and not getting that treatment. You know, I've had that happen a lot of times too. And it makes you think, is that racism? Are they just tired? Or are they just, you know, were they just putting on an act for that person because that person is a boss or whatever, right? You don't know. But having my little brother grow up now, this is happening quite frequently. And it's on the parks when he's playing around and he doesn't talk. He's 2 and a half and he babbles and he's super cute, and he'll be playing around, and there'll be children of other colors, mostly white, and he'll go up to them and play with them, and right away, their mothers will, you know, pull their children away, and it's like, you don't need to do that. What's he gonna do to them? You know what I mean? It's not gonna contaminate them. He's not gonna spread his blackness on, like, it's just nasty, and for all those people who think that it's okay to do that, it's not, and how you do that to a 2.5-year-old child who can't defend himself is ridiculous, and that aggravates the hell out of me.
How did you learn what racism was?
That's
what
speak to you. Okay. Yeah. I think that the teachers that I've had did it as nice as they could. Explain that, you know, racism, this is what they used to do when racism existed, and in the 60s, this is what happened. In the 70s, this is what happened. In the 80s, you know, this started to happen. In the 90s, you know, this started to happen. And it started getting better as, like, the teachings would go on and on to make it seem that, you know, racism had stopped by the time that I was in school, that racism didn't exist anymore. And if someone called you anything, you know, it was always safe to go to a teacher and to talk to them and tell them what's going on, and you'd know you'd be supported. Like, I had this one incident happen where, it was in grade 6, and one of my favorite teachers, she was one of my favorite grade teachers,
And I was in the playground with another girl, and somehow the topic of butts came up, like butts, asses, right? And the one girl said, yeah, my dad says black people all have big asses. And I don't know, I think I got offended by that. I couldn't really recall why. And I told her, and that, like, my teacher had given the other girl a lot of trouble for saying something like that. She's like, you can't be doing that to people. You can't say, you know, base one generalization on everyone else. And like having that support like that made me think that, you know, racism doesn't exist. And if it does, it's gonna be in things like that. And like, you're always gonna have a teacher who's always gonna jump in. You're always gonna have, you know, support. And that's not the case. And I'm starting to learn that now at 18, which is really weird. It's very weird. It's changing my idea of what Kingston was to me. And it's, I don't know, surprising.
Remained in Kingston after my husband graduated, but he couldn't get a job in Kingston after graduating, so he moved to Toronto for about a year, and he recently got a job in Kingston August 3. So this is very recent. He's hardly 2 weeks working full time at home, and so for that reason, I now do love Kingston very, very much.
How would you describe growing up being kind of the only black girl in classes? How was that growing up?
At times it was very, very weird. It was very different. Even to this day, I think there's a few insecurities on my part, you know. Being around your friends that are being asked out, or being around people, you know, that are constantly called pretty or constantly called beautiful. There's like a top 10 hottest girls list, they'd be number one, or they'd be on it. And, you know, continuously know that, you know, I would never make that list. Crossing my fingers, I'd eventually be asked out, right? But haven't been so far. Like that stuff, like that, those situations are very difficult, especially going through your teenage years, right? Because, you know, that's, I guess, when you're most sensitive, or stereotypically most sensitive about, you know, the way you look. Not looking like everyone else has also strengthened me too, because it's like, I know I look different, but I'm still pretty in my own right.
I was in Shoppers a few days ago, I guess a few weeks ago now, and I was looking to get something, like cocoa butter or something. Anyway, some kind of like marked black product. And I was like looking all over the whole store. And eventually I found like their black section behind a pillar and a display of something else. And like you had to like squeeze behind, like it was like really hard to reach everything. And that's where like, you know, like black shampoo and like
hair oil
and all that stuff was like in this narrow thing, directly the width of the pillar in front of it. And I think it's things like little things, like everyday things like that, that make me think how this whole, like this university and this whole city, the whole downtown of the city, I can't speak to like outside of that, is built not for me, and also built to inconvenience me. And it's just a simple thing, like I can't, or when I go to, when I, again, Shoppers again, I was like, oh, do you have any like shampoo for afro hair, because I couldn't find it because it was behind a pillar. And she's like, oh yeah, I think your hair, there are some hair straightening products in this aisle. And I was like, that is not what I asked for. And so little things like that I find as like continual reminders of difference, and of how it's like the status quo is the pillar in front of like the cocoa butter.
Yeah. I like went to that same Shoppers once because I wear foundation, and there's like a bunch of lines in Toronto that like I've used. Like there's the line I use is called Nakara, and I assumed because one Shoppers carried it, they all carried it. So I went there and I was like, oh, I'm looking for like Nakara or whatever, and she's like, oh, we don't carry that. But are you looking for like a makeup? And I was like, yeah. She took me to this like CoverGirl section, and it was like 20 shades of like white skin and then like cocoa, which I guess is supposed to sort of fit all darker skin tones, but it like really, really doesn't. At all. You know, and I was like, well, isn't there like a little bit more variety? And then she like showed me this other liquid foundation that was for dark skin tones, and it was like outrageously expensive. And I was like, no, I'm not looking to spend so much. And it was just awful because like the cocoa didn't work.
Yeah.
So I like had nothing. I was like, okay, cool, no big deal. I'll just, you know, not come here for makeup, I guess.
Oh, that's ridiculous. I mean, we're sitting here, there are three beautiful black women sitting around a table, and like we could not wear the same shade of foundation. Exactly. Like none of us.
Exactly.
That's, yeah, that's absurd.
That's so funny because that was a huge issue for me. Yeah. That was massive.
Mm-hmm.
I could go to like my cousin, who is actually really weird, my cousin's Hispanic, and she has a lighter skin tone than I do, but I'm on the very dark, I understand that. And she had a tan one summer, and she got a cover up for her tan. The tan went away, cover up was left, so I got taken, right? And I tried to come home, and I tried looking everywhere for it. I tried the Shoppers near my house, I tried the Shoppers near downtown, and like, if you don't have the demographics reflected,
mm-hmm.
like, the cosmetics reflect the demographic in that city or in that region, right? And it's brutal. Like, that's, so I haven't had in years because of that reason.
Yeah.
Or even the straightening thing, eh? Like even the straightening comment, like how you can't wear your hair curly, or you can't wear your hair how it's naturally supposed to be. That pretty is straight hair, pretty is thin hair, pretty is, you know, dyed hair, whatever you want to call it. And you know, that's not necessarily true. That's not true at all, actually.
Yeah. I like this summer started wearing my hair natural and like curly and big. I've never done that. Like when I was younger, I'd wear it in like a puff, but I'd never wear my hair down because it bothers me. And so this summer, like I started wearing it out and like not doing anything to it. And like a lot of people compliment it, but I find that when some of these people are complimenting it, they're just sort of making me feel bad because they're like, your hair's cool. Like it's not a toy. It's just different than yours. Can I touch it? No. Can I touch yours? So I ask you to touch your hair? No, don't. Like, and it's so weird that they find it to be this, like, you know, like, thing. Again, it's like, it's not my hair. It's something for you to be interested in and to touch and play with. Like, it's, you know, some sort of, like, child's toy when it's, like, a part of me.
Yeah.
You know? I don't ask to, like, hold your hand and, like, examine it, you know? So why is it that, you know, it's weird.
Yeah, and I think what you were saying earlier about like being marked, like I think that like as I grow out my hair, like I feel more and more and more marked, because, and I think it's true of like black hair in general, that especially for women, or particularly for women, is that if your hair's straightened, it signifies something, and if it's not straightened, it signifies something, and if it's short, it signifies something, whereas like, if anyone else, if a white person just has a ponytail, it's just a ponytail.
It's not a big
like,
deal.
Yeah. It's not, it doesn't mean that you're like this crazy radical, or it doesn't mean like you're assimilated, or it doesn't mean whatever, you know, it's just their hair. Which is something that I like, I'm always struggling with. Because sometimes, like, I know that now I like project this idea of a person that I may or may not reflect in my actual self, which is interesting. And yeah, the amount of people in Kingston who have like, actually it happened to me at the GOAT the other day, someone was like, can I touch your hair? And I was like, with someone who I didn't know very well, who knew this person very well, and I was like, okay.
It's such an awkward,
like, you asking me is not asking permission. Like, I have to say yes now, or else I'm a bitch.
Yeah. And it's so inappropriate too. I mean, it is.
And then she was like, boing, boing, and made a boing, like sound effect. I was like, boing, 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 for so long, and I was sitting there, and I was like mortified. I was like, you need to stop, in my mind, but I like didn't say anything. And then I was like, okay, like I need to go. Just really,
hair is such a complicated realm of life. It's because like you were saying, like sometimes I straighten it and I'm like, well, why am I doing this? And like a lot of me is just like, well, it's like sometimes it's easier to manage.
Mm-hmm.
And then like I like to be able to like go back and forth, but like why do I, like, you know, it's just I don't, sometimes I like overanalyze things and I don't want to, you know. But at the same time, like, if I feel like if somebody likes something, they should be able to do it. Because like if a white person like perms their hair for it to be curly, nobody says they're trying to, you know. And so it should work both ways, and like the whole hair industry is such a
big thing. Yeah, and I think it's interesting, and I think that's another example of people not understanding what thing, like someone who's like, oh, your hair's so awesome, I wish I had hair like you. I'm like,
they say it all.
One, you don't. Two, you don't.
You never will.
No, like you want to like put on a wig for a day, which you can probably do really easily. So
I get that all the time,
because
I hate
it's
it.
So like hair is so politicized.
I hate it.
And like to for it just to be like this cool like accessory.
Yeah.
Is completely.
Damn, I don't know. What would I say? Like explore who you are, and explore like what your race means for you. But at the same time, like, I think, while, yes, like, a race is a group, right? Like a group identifier kind of thing. Like, what it means to you personally and specifically. Because, like, my Black experience is going to be different from yours, which is going to be different from yours, right? And so try not to get caught up too much in, like, all Black people, which I think is a huge problem, at least for me, a huge problem, because, like, within like Black people, there are so many different like subgroup nationality, whatever you want to call it, like, so many different, you know. And so, it, like, try to be specific and speak for yourself. And when people ask you to speak for all of us, don't, because it totally takes away from all of our experiences. And so, you're going to get and you're going to hear, why do Black people, following racist tidbit, or what do Black people think of, following racist tidbit? Don't answer that, because it's not your responsibility as a single person to speak for everybody. You cannot accurately do so, and you therefore you should not try to do so. And to tell people that when they ask you, I'm not every Black person, so I can't answer, but I can answer for myself. Because I think we never say, like, hey, can you tell me why white people, you know, following racist tidbit? We don't do that usually, so it shouldn't be the other way around.
Each interview ended with a fantastical question. If you had a microphone to the entire Black Kingston population and extended to Black people across Canada, what would you say?
Yeah, I would say, especially to the Black community, let's not fit the stereotype. Let's not fit the stereotype to...
This one right here is for the people.
To even feed what people have in their minds about what a Black person can do or cannot do. Let's not do that. Let's work hard. Be allies for each other, be supportive to each other, and be constructive in whatever we're doing, so that we are not just improving as an individual, but improving.
Let's go all the way in on this one.
Some of the smartest dummies can't read the language of Egyptian mummies.
Alright, I mean, what I can say, you mean regarding the Black people?
Yeah.
Or just Black people? Well, I would like to see all the Black people to get along and respect one another, but not only the Black people, but any human being on earth to get along with white, Black, you know, South Americans, Asians, to get along with and respect one another. Like, in particular, I found like the Black people are not they're very divided. You see a lot of negative stereotyping of Black people and Black people. And forgetting that we all come from the same continent. No matter where you are, you come from the same continent. That's where you come from. The motherland. So, there are people who don't identify themselves as African. Not at all. And some people will be thinking, oh, okay, we've been here for quite a long time. We're better than you. We're from Africa. Better than us. It's a lot of that negative stereotype. A lot of that. I've seen that it's and no I've heard that.
We born not knowing. Are we born knowing all?
Well, that's it. Be helpful, be strong.
Can you read thoughts? Can you read palms? Can you predict the future? Can you see storms coming? The earth was flat. If you went too far, you would fall off. No, the earth is round. If the ship
you took and everybody would have stopped. For more information on this and the other radio documentaries and still run research and find out the root of the truth that you seek out. Last teaching
universities and claim like they're smart and cunning. Tell them find a cure when we sneeze and that's when their nose start running. And the rich get stitched up when we get cut. Wanna heal them broken bones in the bush with a wet mud. Can you re-science? Can you re-stars? Can you make peace? Can you fight war? Can you milk cows even though you drive cars? Can you survive against all odds now? It's crazy. The truth. You don't know how they're gonna react.